Let's see, we're going to continue from where we left off.
I want to share with you a shtickle from my Rebbe, Rebbe Gifter. It's directly related to what we're learning now. It's Ramesh on the mark. Morales explaining the power that you see in the guy in the time of Mashiach. And that time is now. You see that they have tremendous control and power. And we're really very helpless. This is something which... It's current events. It's in Yanim Shal Yom Yom. The power that we're living through. I mean, not that the press is any gauge of anything, but it is sort of a litmus test. It's a way of telling, you know, because the media, they're in the business of making money. And they choose the stories, and they write the stories in a way that's going to make them the most money. And they make money when people read their stories, when there's interest. And then they could show their advertisers how many people, or customers or subscribers that they have. And that is their motivation. That is their sole motivation, is to make money. It's a business. So it is a reflection of what people want to read. It's not a reflection of the truth. It's a reflection of what people want to read. And there's trends. We have an Arab that he's... So this, you'll appreciate this. It's funny, but it's tragic, because it's about a tragedy. But up north in this area called Kana, it's near an Arab village, the Arabs are rioting, they're throwing firebombs. The police went in there to arrest the people, the ones that are throwing firebombs. It's a crime. And there was a squad car that was attacked by a crazy mob of Arabs and a guy with a knife. And the guy, he attacked the squad car. He claims that it was closed, he was banging at the window, so there wasn't really much of a threat to the policeman. And then the police opened up the door, and the Arab didn't run away. He was just, when they took out the gun, then he started running away, and they shot him. They wounded him. And he died of his wounds. This is an uproar throughout the whole country because of this. There's an uproar throughout the whole world because of this. Because an Israeli policeman had the chutzpah to shoot a guy that was trying to kill people with a knife. Now, what do they claim? They claim the time he shot him, the guy turned away. Well, when you attack a policeman with a knife and then he pulls out his gun and you turn to run away, then, he's going to run away because the knife against the gun isn't much help. So he didn't have to kill him. Well, first of all, he didn't kill him. He wounded him. He died of his wounds. Well, that's the point. Like, I don't know what the policeman did, what he didn't do. Listen, if they're carrying a knife, you should kill him. I don't really care, if he's turned, shoot him in the back or shoot him in the front. He's a ritzayah. The din is achas das lahamis. There's no shayla halacha lamaisa. Okay, what's he doing with the knife? What does he think he's playing with the knife? What does he think he's every single playing with knives in the base of Edris? He's got a knife. He's going to kill somebody with it. What do you think, Let's see, he wasn't facing this way, he was facing that way. The squad car was closed, it wasn't open. It doesn't make a difference. But the point is the reaction of the world is that we don't have a right to defend ourselves. The police go in to make an arrest for a terrorist. They're going in there to arrest a terrorist. Some of the target civilians, some of them are throwing explosive devices at people driving by with civilians with women and children. And you're trying to stop them from making the arrest by holding a knife. Anybody seichel knows. Guy that does that, he's asking to be shot. The entire country, it's on flame because of this. I mean, they're rioting all over the country. The Israeli policeman killed somebody. He didn't have to kill him. He wasn't in danger. Not like I was telling my shit today. The policeman shot a man with a knife. shot an Arab with a knife. And the guy asked me, how do you do that? How do you shoot someone with a knife? I got such nachas.
He just didn't get it, though.
No, he didn't. I got such knockers. I said, this is Mamash and Talmud. Rebbe. But you have a young girl that an Arab runs, you know, tries to run over a whole bunch of people by a transportation stop, a hitching spot, and repeatedly stabs a young girl in the neck until she dies. And then you have someone in Tel Aviv, an Arab jumps out in Tel Aviv and stabs a soldier until he dies. No. Is that no? Did it even make the news? Not that the news is important. It's not important. It has nothing to do with reality. It shouldn't be a part of our reality. But it is showing us something. And Atikva, the words of Atikva, is Lios am Chafshi Beretzenu. That we should be Chafshi, we should be free to do as we want in our land. That was the Zionist dream. We're not free to do as we want. We're under voluntary lockdown. We can't go where we want. We can't go where we want. We can't do what we want. And we're trying to defend ourselves. We're condemned for it. That's the ultimate limit. It's ultimate limitations in a person's personal liberties when you deprive him the right to defend his life and the life of the citizens. If somebody goes out and kills a young girl, a religious girl, by the way, a religious family, a carbon, it's very, very difficult times. And they get away with it. So that's my point, and they get away with it. It's ridiculous. It's obscene. It's an assault on any human value. And they get away with it. Why? There's just one reason. They have the power and we don't. You have the power, you can get away with whatever you want. You can trample on every single value. And you can uphold that as a value. It's pure power. The power of the Caucus against us is increasing. And we're helpless. And that's what we discussed last week. That if we're going to take on our enemies, the nations of the world, on a physical playing field, like in an arena, we're going to go down. Because they're animals. And a human being against an animal is going to lose. The only way a human being could win against an animal is if he uses his wits. And wits is called seichel. There's very little seichel around now. Very, very little of it. It's very rare. The morale says in many places, and it's based on Chazal, it's based on Midrashim, that a person's an Olam Katan. A human being is a microcosm of the world. And a microcosm means that you ever been to mini Israel?
Yeah.
Epcot. What? Epcot? Okay, Epcot. In my days, there was the World's Fair. I went to the World's Fair in 1967. Yeah, they had different. They had pavilions. They had New York, and then I think there was one of the items of the World's Fair, like a big globe, that they transported it to Shea Stadium. It was by Shea Stadium for many years. One of the relics from the World's Fair. Each year had pavilions, and each one they reproduced a miniature world. You go to Mini Israel, you see the Baha'i Gardens. Reproduce a miniature to scale. Consul Marovi Lahavdil, Elif Alfi Avdalis. They even have misspelling them there, back and forth. You have the Hermon with the ski slope. There's the highway system. Some of it's pretty good. I took pictures of cutting out all the background, just getting in really close. And it looked like, when I developed it, it looked like the real thing. Which was their point. So when you see something that's a microcosm, so it might be small, but that means every single element that you have in the big thing is present in the small thing. It's just small. And a person's olam katan. Because also it's a medrash, yeah? Because I'll say that it's mamash real. People have eyes. The Pasuk says, "V'hinah kisas ein ha'aretz." The eye of the earth is covered over. The Pasuk, "Kisas ein ha'aretz." It's got to refer to Klal Yisrael. They cover over the eye of the earth. The earth has eyes. We have legs and thighs. We see when we put the same karnis miyakas ha'aretz. That we should gather together all the exiles from Yakas Yara, from the thighs of the world. The world has thighs. We have a middle section, a belly button, a tabur. Tabur is a belly button. Eretz Yisrael is the tabur. The Teveria is the tabur of Eretz Yisrael. We think Teveria is tabur. Teveria is belly button. That's what Teveria means. A man is an Eilu Katan. You're going to find whatever you. They say that people are made up of 75% water. That's roughly what the world is. There's a parallel. And since it's a parallel, then we should be able to see the parallels. Oh, thank you very much. I remember a gift to Akasha. There's a Yisoid in Rishonim. It's brought down by Rabbeinu Bachai. There's a Yisoid in Rishonim. The Yaakov Avinu had two names, and those names were used interchangeable, back and forth and back and forth. He's the only one of the others that it was like that. The Avram, he had one name, which changed to Avraham, and that was it. One time, it's over. No more Avram, now it's Avraham. Yitzchak never had a name change. Sarah, I went to Sarah. Once it was Sarah, it was always Sarah. But Yaakov sometimes, Yisrael sometimes, Yaakov sometimes. And the Rebbeinu Bachai brings a Yisoid. That depends on the context. Yaakov means heel. Yisrael means nobility. Sar. Like an officer, like a nobleman. When Yaakov Avinu was in this world, he lived in two worlds. In the Sulam Musav Atzah, Varesha Megiyah Shemaimah. His legs of the Sulam were on this world, and the top of the Sulam was in Shemaim. And this was Yaakov's dream, because this was the reason why Yaakov dreamt of a Sulam, that the legs are firmly rooted on earth. And it's in the Shemaim, because that's what Yaakov was.
He said that last year in
Shir that the only Yisrael was trying to remind Hashem that we're from Yaakov, from Yisrael. We use Yisrael when we lift ourselves up at a level that we're relating to heaven. Mm-hmm. So you go through it. I give you a homework. You can go through some of the stuff, and you'll see. When Yaakov Avinu was revealing.
Is it
Melchizedek? Oh, no. When he's revealing at the end of his life, when he was revealing what's going to be, what his children are going to face. And so it descended on Yaakov a Ruach HaKadosh. And it talks about Yisrael. Because Yaakov Avinu at that time was connected to heaven. He was in heaven. He was in a state, a heavenly state. It was called Yisrael. But Yaakov Avinu was fighting wars, so he's called Yaakov. It goes down to Mitzrayim. You'll see. It's pretty consistent. Except when you come to one pasuk. In Parsha Vayechi, there's a pasuk, and the pasuk goes like this. Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus. It came close for the days of Yisrael to die. According to the rule, that Yaakov is when Yaakov has dealings with this world, and Yisrael is when he deals with the next world. So why would you say, Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus? It came days of Yisrael to die. It should say, Vayikrivu Yimei Yaakov Lamus. It's a kasha. Do you understand the kasha? It should say, Vayikrivu Yimei Yaakov Lamus. Because Misa is not some... There is no Misa in Olam Haba. There is no death in Olam Haba. In Olam Haba, things live forever. Death is only a function of this world. So how could it say, Vayikrivu Yimei Yisrael Lamus? It came time for Yisrael to die. Yisrael doesn't die. That's the kasha. The Rebbe said he said, did the tzaddikim die? And the Rishayim die. People that aren't tzaddikim die. Someone that's not a tzaddik, when it comes the time for him to die, Kadosh Baruch sends a malach. The malach is called Malach HaMaves. Hashem tells the Malach HaMaves, it goes with that big sickle there, you know. Do you see the pictures in the Gadosh HaPesach? That's a scary Malach. He's called the Grim Reaper. The Grim Reaper. And Hashem tells the Malach, go and kill the person. The Malach HaMaves kills the intended victim, the guy dies. He's put to death, he's executed. That's how some people die. They're executed by the Malach, called the Malach HaMaves. Tzaddikim don't die that way. The way tzaddikim die is because tzaddikim always want to die. They don't want to be here. The things that tzaddikim see when in this world are revolting to them. This world is a world where you could choose evil. Why would they want that? This is a world where evil is held on an equal parity. It's held on the same level. It's your choice. It's a democracy. You could do what you want, when you want, what you want. It's your world. It's a free country. There's so much in this world that pain and suffering and tribulation, punishment, einish, heaven. There's an inability to understand God's ways in this world. There's darkness. There's so many things that take a person away from his true purpose. It repels them. They're repulsed by it. The neshama of tzaddik doesn't want to be here. None of us. The Mishnah says, Balkach Kratan Neilad. The Neshama doesn't have a choice. That's one of the things that Hashem doesn't give the Neshama. Hashem doesn't give the Neshama the Chira to be born or not. Once a person's born, we're born into Bechira. But to be born, Hashem does not give us that choice. The Kadosh Baruch Hu creates a vessel to contain the Neshama. The Neshama on its own would fly to Shemayim. We'll take one shmek, or one look around, and fly to Shemayim. There's nothing here that the Neshama is attracted to. There's nothing here to offer the Neshama. Because Baruch Hu created a vessel that contains the Neshama. And the Neshama is stuck. Can't get out. Alright, once we're here, It's like, but you have any. Okay, now that you're here, let's make the best of it. So you could use the tools of Bechira and the things Hashem provides in this world to get back to Shemayim. And that's what the, you know, so Hashem has, his whole life, spends his whole life there trying to work together with the good to get back. So there is something rewarding. There's a purpose for being here. It's just, it's not enjoyable. It's not something the Neshama wants, but once the Neshama's here, it's going to do everything it can to get back. So there's a purpose to being here. It's rewarding. It's just not something the Neshama would have ever chosen. It wants to get it over with. It wants to get it over with. The Neshama wants to die, but it can't. But the Gemara in Bracha says that death for a Rasha is like the experience of taking the thorns and dragging them through the wool of a sheep. It's not easy. There's a lot of resistance, a lot of drag. The barbs, they make their way into the wool of the sheep and they don't come out. They don't want to come out. They're like so firmly attached to the wool. You can't get it out. You got to rip a gouge out parts to get it out. You got to gouge out parts of the sheep's hide to get it out. And death for a tzaddik, what the Gemara says, it's like taking a hair. You have like a saucer of milk and there's a little hair that fell into the saucer. And you don't want to drink the milk with the hair in the saucer. You want to take the hair out. So you put your finger in, you grab the hair, and you pull the hair out. How much hard do you have to pull on that little hair there to get the hair out of the milk? You got to yank it out. The hair is going to fight against you. Well, how much strength does that take to get the hair out of a saucer of milk? It glides right out. Because tzaddikim want to die. Until death. Thank you. It's just us. And Rishayim don't. Because Rishayim want to stay here. They don't want to go to heaven. In heaven, Chas V'Shalom, you might have to stay in Shir until 1 o'clock. They want to leave at 12:45. They might miss lunch. It's like, as I say, that's a muscle to heaven and Gehenna. It's the same thing, you know. But tzaddik, he loves it, you know. He's just, his mind is open. It's getting filled with such wisdom from his Rebbe. And then the clock, you know, is ticking away. It's getting close to 1 o'clock. And he doesn't want it to end. He just wants the Rebbe to keep going and going and going. His mind is expanding. He's so much simcha. He understands so much. So he wishes that the clock would slow down and it would always be 12:55. You know, should be able to be there forever. And that's Mamash Gan Eden. Gan Eden is a clock that at 12:55 it never goes further. The Rishon is never over. 12:55, it's for forever. What's Gehenna? You have a Rasha. He can't stand shit. It doesn't mean anything to him. He doesn't appreciate it. He doesn't understand it. And he's looking at the clock, it's 12:55. He's waiting, 5 more minutes, I'm out of here. And the clock is stuck at 12:55. It never changes, never goes further. Never. It's the same thing. That's what Dalam Haba is. The clock is stuck at 12:55. So, what's Gehenna to one person is Gehenna to another person. And it's Mamash Emes, you know. Gehenna's not a place. After death is the Olam Emes. People that appreciate Emes, to them Emes is something to embrace. And you enjoy being in the presence of Emes forever. And if somebody always ran away from the Emes or went into or served the forces of darkness, so when he's exposed to Emes, it's extremely embarrassing. There's no place to hide.
Maybe if the Neshama doesn't want to be there, how come the Tzaddikim are going to cry when the Yitzhahara is shifted?
Yeah, that's a, you know, just the opportunity that we have because we're in a place we don't want to be is great. It's a tremendous amount of eternity. You could be kinder, you could acquire eternity by being in a place where you don't want to be because it's the right thing to do. So you have both emotions at the same time. On the one hand, you want the opportunity. You want the Yitzhar is a good thing. It's called Tayv Ma'id. Vayar Elokim is Kol Asher Ni Tayv Ma'id. It's called Tayv Ma'id because The Tahara is what creates, sets up the environment for us to be tested, and the purpose. But the environment is not an enjoyable experience. So you enjoy the fact that you're accomplishing. But you're present among in an environment that's totally foreign to what you are.
So tzaddik wants to be here now. Tzaddik wants to be here, but his neshama doesn't.
Correct. The neshama does not, but the person does. There's the person.
That's the A.B. Romberg song.
That is the A.B. Romberg song.
Which
one? But the no, I don't want to go. There's so much pain and evil on the earth below. Let me stay here up in heaven where it's safe and I'll be warm.
Why would they want to, like, they cried? I thought because they wanted to, don't
confuse the different parts of the person. There's the neshama by itself, and then there's the person.
The person is not
the neshama. Hopefully the neshama guides the person. It's the guiding light of the person. But the body is a person also.
The body kind of
comes back to life after Kesa Mesa. And lives forever. The person is the sum total of all his parts. It's the gift together with the neshama. There's a part of the person called the neshama that rejects everything that there is in this world. Guf and neshama together have some use in the world. But the neshama without the guf has none. So right now we're talking about the neshama by itself, without the guf. The guf and neshama together is different. The guf and neshama together is a unique creation that lives in this world, which is tailor-made for Kuf and Neshama together to accomplish. And it's the loss of accomplishment, the loss of the ability to accomplish that the tzaddikim are crying over. So they're crying because they can no longer accomplish. But the Neshama is very happy that there's no more evil. When all evil disappears, it's bittersweet. There's a source of simcha that there's no evil, and there's a sense of loss that there's nothing more to conquer. And both are true. Is that clear?
It's clear as it's going to be to me right now, probably.
It's both true. It's a simcha and it's a loss. They're not contradictions.
The fact that Yishmael is so powerful right now, is that a riot to the fact, that Yishmael added or joined with Purim's mother? Seems like we can't have the Kesher at the same time.
Yishmael being powerful right now is because Yishmael joined the class. So how does tzaddikim die? I mean, they don't want to live. Yeah, the neshama doesn't want to join with the body in the first place. So Kadosh Baruch Hu created the body to contain the neshama. So the body contains the neshama. The neshama's in jail. And Hashem doesn't send the Malach HaMavis to kill the Tzaddik. So how did Tzaddikim die? How did Tzaddikim die? There's no Malach HaMavis, and the body holds the Neshama and stops the Neshama from going back to Shemayim. How does the Tzaddik die? There is no Malach HaMavis. Hashem does not kill Tzaddikim.
Who says they die?
The body and soul separate. What causes them to separate? Teretz is anything in this world is limited. Even a powerful entity is going to eventually weaken. It's weaker and weaker and weaker. There's no eternity in Adam Hazeh. there might be tremendous displays of strength, but as time passes, the strength eventually will wane, it'll get smaller, it'll diminish, it'll get weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. The same is true of everything on this earth, animal, vegetable, or mineral. With the passage of time, things just crumble to dust. You know, they discover these artifacts that are hidden away for thousands of years. And you know, they're so careful to handle it gingerly. If you touch it, it'll just crumble. And then they have to spray it with things and they with glue-like substances just to keep it together. The older something is, the more close it is to falling apart. That's in this world. Hashem made a container. That container is called the guf. It's very strong. In the early stages, in its youth, it's very, very strong. And the neshama tries to leave the guf, and the neshama, and the guf holds it back, and the guf is stronger. The guf is strong. It's able to restrain the neshama from going back to Shemayim. Because it's connected. Hashem made the guf. It's connected to the neshama, and the neshama can't break free. When a tzaddik gets older, what happens to the guf of a tzaddik when he gets older? His guf gets weaker and weaker and weaker. Until the neshama isn't restrained by it anymore. And the neshama jumps out of the guf. That's how tzaddikim die. Their body becomes too weak. And they can't hold on to the neshama anymore. It's like a hair being pulled out of milk. The neshama just jumps back into God's embrace. Now the guf does more than just hold the neshama from going back to Shemayim. So the relationship of guf and neshama is the same as the relationship as Yaakov and Esau. They're never both up or down at the same time. If Yaakov is up, Esav is down. If Esav is up, Yaakov is down. And the same thing could be said for the relationship of the guf and the neshama. The stronger a person is, then the less his sechel, the less his neshama is going to express itself in this world. And that's true even of tzaddikim, okay? Even of tzaddikim. Even a tzaddik. But when he's younger, when he's strong, the very fact that he's strong, that he has physical strength, is going to define him as a physical person, as a physical entity, and the spiritual parts of a physical person are going to be in decline. Because the physical part and the spiritual part of a person are extremes. They're adversaries. The spiritual part of a person makes sense. The physical part of the person does not. The physical part of a person is not smart. The physical part of a person has drives. What are the drives of a physical part of a person? The drives of the physical part of the person is to run after what it wants. What are the drives of the spiritual part of the person? Is to run after what's good for it. They don't get along. They can't get along. Because the spiritual part of the person rejects something that's not good for it. And the physical part of the person rejects something that it doesn't enjoy. They're two roommates. They don't get along. You have one roommate that everything he does is, you know, in the pursuit of bettering himself. And then the other room, it is everything he does in pursuit of absorbing and bringing to himself more and more pleasure and instant gratification. I mean, such a person is going to be the most terrible roommate in the world. He's not going to make his bed in the morning. He's going to leave his socks on the floor. They can't get along. You cannot get along with someone that leaves his socks on the floor. It's messy. And the Maharal says this. Even a Talmid Chacham, a tzaddik, he makes all the right decisions. He's a tzaddik. He's learning Ras Madan. He makes all the right decisions, and he's perfecting himself in all areas. If he's physically strong, his mind is going to be limited. Because the body is, the bodily kekis are Esav, and the kekis of the mind, the kekis of the sechel, is Yaakov, and one is up, the other is down.
When we work on Pashas Vayishlach, it seemed like both Yaakov and Esav were up. And they knew each other. Esav had 400 soldiers.
Esav was a king and Yaakov was not.
Yaakov
right
was
after that, right
healthy.
In Parshas Vayishlach, it's telling about the dynasty of Esav. But Esav ruled for, he had a dynasty, he ruled, there's 11 kings in Esav's line, and then it came to an end, and then Yaakov Avinu produced his first king. Esav had an army, Yaakov had an army. Esav was a king. Esav wasn't afraid that Yaakov was going to wipe him out. Yaakov was afraid that Esav was going to wipe him out. Yaakov said, we're going to die. I'm saying, I'm not sure what you mean,
like,
separated. Yeah, you made two pieces. They'll kill the first one, but then we'll stall him, and the other ones will be able to run away.
And when Esav fell apart, that was...
That's when Yaakov had David HaMelech. David HaMelech came right afterwards, and... But Esav's dynasty fell apart. So, the physical...
was really strong.
Yeah.
Lifted a whole rock.
I don't know, but he didn't fight Esav. He was prepared to fight Esav because he'd have no choice. But he did two other things. He sent him a present. He prepared himself for war. He used strategy, and he davened. So he's fighting Esav from a higher plane. He's fighting Esav from a point of seichel. Esav only did one thing. He's going to fight. Yaakov did three things. How do you win against somebody that has superior capabilities? You have to outsmart him. And that's what Yaakov did. You outflank him, you outsmart him, you lull him into a false sense of security, you bow down in front of him, Yaakov defeated Esav. He tricked him. He tricked him. He bowed down seven times until he got there. He got closer each time,
And his neck turns, though.
That helps. It definitely helps. But Yaakov didn't do that. Hashem did that. Yaakov, he subjugated himself.
What was Esav's plan with that?
He was going to kill him. He was going to kill his women. He was going to kill his children and everyone. And grab his wives. He was going to do it. He was going to do it.
And then when he couldn't do it, he changed his mind completely?
Well, from the events of the encounter, it seems that Yaakov found a place in Esau's heart for a few moments. When Esav wanted to continue on with Yaakov, he told Yaakov, come back to my kingdom, we'll be together. Yaakov sort of begged off. But he found an opening there. A bit of compassion. When a person gets older, the body weakens. And then the seichel gets stronger. And this could be way before death. I'm saying, a person gets older, he gets weak, he can't do it, he didn't when he was younger. It happens, you get weak, you can't do it. The body weakens, the neshama gets stronger. The body weakens some more, the neshama gets stronger. Until the neshama is so strong, it can break free of the body. But when the body's young, there's no way. In this world, the strong body wins, the neshama loses. It's the same yisurid. You understand now? You understand why it's an olam katan? A person is an olam katan. The world also has a youth, it has a middle age, and it has an old age. Maral said that Kadosh Baruch created the four Malchias, the four great nations, and God gave them tremendous physical power. Each one of them ruled the entire world. That's a sign that God gave them the maximum power that you could have in this world. So if you fight them in this world, you're fighting maximum power. You can't win when you fight against maximum power. That's why they call it maximum power. You can't fight maximum power because you don't have it and they do. So you're going to lose. And God gave it to them, so they're going to win. He says, gave them by Yisrael Mitchilas Olam, that they have the power to overcome Klal Yisrael from the beginning of the world. Like we said, that they're mentioned in Bereishis. Tayyu, Bavayu, Chayishik, Apanesh, and they're mentioned in Bereishis. Abu Saifimei Olam, the world and man are one. Man is an Olam Katan. If man is an Olam Katan, then the world is an Adam Gadol. It works both ways. Man is a microcosm. He's a small world. That means the world is a large man. And just like man has this tremendous strength, he exhibits tremendous strength, tremendous power. When he gets, and then the strength of a man is dominant, and the intellect of the man is submits. It's submissive, because in a world of physical strength, when you have a young physical man, then the physical power of the man is going to overcome. The man gets older, so he's no longer in the physical world anymore. So the way that they talk about what to do with old people nowadays. If they can't accomplish anything in the physical world, then there's no quality of life. That's what they talk about. They talk about people like that. And they might as well just leave.
What's the other way inside of Kadai?
This is it.
As in, like, 35-year-old going, you know, or passes away or something like that. His neshama was too powerful for the body. There was no balance in the first place.
You're asking when a tzaddik dies young. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, that question was asked before. It was asked by Moshe Rabbeinu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, according to one view in the Gemara, he never got the answer. That's called tzaddik v'ra'alei. That's an exception to the rule. The rule is people get old, they die. When people die young, that's a separate reason. So right now we're talking about the rule.
Isn't that like, I heard the pshat in the Maral. I don't know for this one, but someone told me that there's two ways when Mashiach can come. One that...
Mitach
Hashem.
Hmm?
Yeah. We bring our own skos, or is Esau something like that, old on a donkey? Is there like...
It's not the Maral, it's a Gemara. There's two ways. We've already gone past that. I think we've gone past... We can't bring Mashiach on our own schos is not what we should hedge our bets on. We should go for the other route, that he has to come just because it's impossible if he doesn't. I think the opportunity of bringing Mashiach on our own schos is long past
next year Shabbos project.
Yes, it's Shabbos.
Or tomorrow.
When the world gets old, the world is getting old. Just Alfishnin Habi Amma, the physical world lasts for 6,000 years. It's 5,775. And the world is already, it's a senior citizen. The world could get a senior citizen's discount on its Rav-Kav. The world's getting old. If you take a good look at the world, the picture you're going to see, it's a world that possesses tremendous power, but the powers are getting old. What happens when the powers get old? So then we're no longer fighting a physical adversary. The spiritual powers in the world, that's us, hopefully, we free ourselves from the strong physical influence of the nations of the world. And we're able to rise to a higher level. The people that view themselves as primarily spiritual creatures, that's us. As the physical prowess, the physical strength of the world going to decline, so then our spiritual level rises. If our spiritual level rises, so when we battle with our enemies, we're battling them on a different plane. It's a spiritual being that's fighting a physical entity, but not on his terms. If you fight a physical entity in this world on his terms with physical means, you will lose, because they're animals. If you raise yourself up, you raise yourself up above your own goof. Yes, I have a goof, but that's not primarily where I live. I live in my mind. I live in my seichel. I live in my neshama. I have a goof. But I'm not my goof. That doesn't define me. It doesn't limit me. When that part of a person becomes strong and powerful, so when you fight against your adversaries, when you fight your wars, you're fighting them from a spiritual plane. They have no defense against it. You daven that everything they do, every bullet that they shoot at you misses. That's not a physical thing. You daven and you give tzedakah, you learn Torah. That you shouldn't be able to harm you. You're not fighting on their level. You're not playing fair. Because they can't fight against that. They can't. They have no defense against it. They have no offense against it. They have no tactics against it. If you have eyes to see in your head, you'll see that this is happening now. All the things that we've been accustomed to, seeing examples of power, physical power, they're like in the last gasps, death throes. But you have to be very careful. You know, when they shech the cow, the shechin have to be very careful. Because after a cow is slaughtered, it can give out a blow. It can deliver a blow, which is more powerful than anything it could deliver when it's alive. When a cow's alive, so then there's a brain that controls, you know, who it kicks or how strong it kicks. There is some kind of decision process in the cow, who to kick and how much to kick, and it's a mighty blow. But when the animal's been slaughtered, then there's a disconnect. So chopping the head off of an animal tends to disconnect the top of the animal from the bottom. It happens. And then the animal's just pure brute force without anything directing it. It's very dangerous. And the animal, even say, it runs around a little bit after it's shafted.
Chickens.
It runs after the chickens, yeah. Now I think it very, very accurately describes the world now. There's a tremendous show of force, but it's the last gasp of a physical existence that's going into decline. It's a very dangerous time. And the only defense against it is not to meet physical with physical. It doesn't work. You can't fight against people that drive their cars into crowds of people. They're behemoths. You can't win. You can't fight. A behemoth will find a way. And if you go down to his level, you try to fight him physically, he's going to win. Because we're not behemoths. They are behemoths. We're not. We lose. You know, they have all these things, the measures and the countermeasures, and the Israeli security system is the greatest in the world, and they're the brightest, and they're always a step ahead. It's not working. Some guy with a pickup truck could defeat the greatest minds in Israeli intelligence if they want to go after someone. Why? Because intelligence is only meant, you know, to fight intelligent beings. When you're dealing with animals, intelligence doesn't do you any good. You know, all these things, all the methods that they use to catch people, they're all based on the assumption that the attacker is going to try and survive the attempt. So there's certain things he's not going to do, because if he does them, he's going to die. And they count on it. that they could, you know, they could put certain safeguards in place that make it too dangerous for the attack to take place. It's called, it's deterrence. If you do it, you're going to get caught, you're going to get killed. But if somebody's an animal, then getting caught and getting killed doesn't play a role, doesn't exist. You can't prevent a lone assassin that has no sense of no sense of his own safety. Like I say, if someone survives such an attempt, it's pure luck. Drive cars into people, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Do you have suggestions? What are you going to do? Stay off the streets. The wildcat, the animalistic nature of the highest race, the highest that Daniel saw is coming out, and we're losing because you can't find the Baral Mami says it. He says there's only one way. It's the only solution. Listen, you don't know of any other solution, so let's listen to the Baral solution. Recognize that the physical part of the world is in decline. Take a good look at ourselves. Take a good look at our neshamas. Make the neshama a very important part of our lives. Stop thinking physical. They're going to do this, we're going to do that. Kill death to all the terrorists. You know how many terrorists there are? You're going to be very busy trying to kill terrorists. Like I said, you know. Let's say at best you have a few hundred thousand people, they've got 50 million terrorists. Every single Muslim is a terrorist. You're going to be so busy. You couldn't kill the terrorists if they stood in front of you online. You wouldn't be able to kill all the terrorists. Death to all the terrorists. We should guide them. Stop looking at the events through the eyes of politics, through the eyes of the governments, through the eyes of world opinion. What's going on now? The nations are showing the true colors that they're animals. We're seeing that we are a failure. We can't fight against it. So we only have one thing left, and that's to come in touch with the spiritual side of ourselves. And to look at the eyes through the eyes of God. What's happening now is God. He's doing this. It's for our benefit. And to respond accordingly. Let me show you. Shukayak, 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 Shukayak,